I suppose 1970 was when I was born, so therefore, say, it would have been kind of 7 or 8 before you started listening to, originally we say Radio Luxembourg on medium wave, a little old red radio, I vaguely remember it, where if you let go, you know, one of those ones, you let go of the knob and it's kind of going, oops, it's changed again. Yeah. So then we say Big L and Radio Limerick would have been the two main ones that I'd remember. Now, I know Limerick had RLWE and a few others before that. Kind of before my time, you're 7 year old, you weren't really listening. But so the first ones I'd probably have a relatively clear memory of would have been Red Alumni and Big Al, and just having heard the RLWE name around.
And tell us about your memories of those then, because they were quite different stations, the two of them. Radio Limerick, much more traditional, maybe.
Yeah, well, I suppose the target audience was certainly been somewhat different. Was hey, like if you're the likes of was hey John Ryan, Francis Jones, Mike Richardson, Mike Byrne. You'd have had just, we say, people that some people would have come along, like Declan Copas is now on 95, he was on Big L. So that was kind of playing music, yes, we say Mike Richardson would have been Big Elvis fan and rock and roll and stuff like that, and they had Paddy Brennan with the Rock and Roll Club. But in general, it was more of a pop music station with a couple of specialist shows, whereas Radio Limerick then was probably aimed at the older audience, and then it would have been a case of chatty radio, we'll say, that you felt like somebody was in the corner of the room that you knew. And that was probably the persona. Now, we had hoped to have John Frawley Jr., and he's on holidays this week, so we'll hopefully get him for you in the future. But he would have been, he would have had a persona that wasn't completely false. And I've had this chat with John. It would have been a persona in terms of, oh yeah, sure, go on lads, oh look outside the window, we'll check the weather, should we look out the window, and walk away from the microphone, or say that he was going to make a cup of tea and he'd actually go and do it. But whether he was actually making it, you'd have heard him stir the thing, stir the cup, yeah, and hear it banging off the cup. Whether he was actually doing that, he was a brilliant showman in terms of that, because he was a shrewd enough businessman and it was a successful business. So you kind of think, he's not quite the, like, there's a Pat Sharp persona going on there, but they were both parts of him. He was a complex character, but he tapped into the older people. He's the one who got mentioned on the Late Late Show in terms of Billy Connolly and Gabo having a chat with Death Notices and so on. So yeah,
so he had Death Notices, and he had, I believe, messages to the kids going to school in the morning, and all sorts of unusual stuff that we would consider very different today for radio stations that are around now.
Very much so. Now, you have, we'll say, stuff like 4FM now, we'll say, which PJ Gallagher might have a catchphrase for a certain group of people or stuff like that, but that was right across the board. We'd say you had the Dressing Ground Brigade. He would have, we'll say, done the mam and dad's jobs of, get up, it's dad. But, like, you're going to be late. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And that was, it definitely much really, really spoke to people. It would have been the parents that were on, even back then. I know nowadays kids would be kind of roll their eyes a lot sooner, it feels like. But if even then, you'd have kind of gone, oh, cheers, what'd she listen to? But it was part of the day. It was that part of the day. It was part of the routine in the morning. Then, we'd say, he'd be reading news reports directly from the newspaper. He would probably say on air, it's kind of, well, I was coming in here and I was talking to so and so, so he'd have the gossip news, and he'd say, but they didn't have much else to say, so I tell you, we'll go down, we'll put on Tommy Drennan now and we'll play this for you, and then I'll go down and get the paper and see if anything else happened. Do you know, it was that kind of conversational. And it worked. Whether it was 100% him, it wasn't, because he was a lot more shrewd than the character he played.
He was making money from this.
It was a bit of both. I've spoken to John about it, and hopefully he'll give you more. But he was a shrewd businessman who played a character, but he played it so convincingly it had to be part of him as well. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like just a persona.
He was very much the station, wasn't he? Because I remember listening, and he'd be doing the voiceovers on the ads as well, many of them. So it was like the whole thing was based on him, really.
Yeah, the ads were a continuous tape. So it was the look of the draw, like you just hit play, and half the time it was like, I think it was later adopted by some of the early community stations where it would have been the classifieds, where it was the same music bed between all of them, and it was just changing. Now somebody would say, well, you won't know where one ad starts and one finishes, so you have to have your own segment and be sure of what you're paid for. But that's the way it worked. It was just a cassette tape, press play, went through to the end, got rewound to the end, but it was generally the same music behind it. Then he also did a few kind of sing-along things. Part of his character would have been kind of No Look on Her, Happy Butcher, and apologies to anyone's ears, this is my version of it, but that was...
The Happy Butcher you're singing.
Noel O'Connor, the Happy Butcher. He'd actually, he'd just sing it out and next thing, oh, he's got some great deals this week. It was just him. That's the thing. There was other cases where it felt like he would have done them live, right? And just recorded them while he was doing them, so they were there then for the next day.
Okay.
That's the whole vibe.
Incredible stuff. So singing ads live on air and reusing them, but was all part of the show. But he was, as you say, he wasn't a fool. He was making money out of this and was very successful.
Yeah, a really complex character. He would have had... So many people would say that are around, and there's other names that people would have been familiar with, Tom O'Donnell being one of them, who went on as well to work with subsequent stations. But it was the personality, the vibe, it was the whole ethos of the station. And even by virtue of the fact that, what, how many years later, people are still saying John the Man. Yes, they do know Radio Mini, but... They'd nearly know more about John the Man or know the phrase beforehand. And that's a part of that is because he got mentioned on the Late Late Show with Billy Connolly and Gable.
Yeah. So moving on to the 80s then, what were the main stations here? Obviously, Radio Limney got more competition. I think Big L closed down around the middle of the 80s and other stations then emerged.
Yeah, well, Big L would have kind of overlapped the start of the 80s. And they would have been around the corner here just in downstairs in Ellen Street. They had... pretty decent setup. At one stage they were in the I'm trying to think of which of the newspapers it was, one of the local newspapers, where they apparently had the third biggest broadcast network in Ireland, because there were 92.1, 98 and 104 then was in the county. They were covering city and county. They had the 194 meter medium wave as well, but they had that level of a network and the interlinks between those. And I remember the article was basically saying that, yes, when you set up that and you want to invest in it and even go further, I think Richardson wanted to go further with it, but then you had, you could get a knock on the door and lose the whole lot tomorrow. So there was always that fine balance between getting a decent quality. But they had a big network. The network went on. They moved it to Kilkee one year for the summer, which would have been where lots of people in Limerick went on holidays, and they took over the top floor of the Atlantic Hotel. And there is a photograph somewhere, and it slipped down behind something, but it's where the top floor of the Atlantic Hotel, which is now gone, would have been a half floor, and the rest of it was just a rectangular block. So you had the half floor, and you'd a letter in each window on the top floor.
Big L. And spelling out Big L.
Big L on holidays. That's not what was there, but it was Radio Big L. But it was on 96.6, could be wrong on that one, 96.2 or 96.6 in Kilkee, which meant that anyone who came home from Limerick, and I think it was one of the things that possibly rattled Big L a little bit, because the lads who were here kind of, oh, that's a great idea, we'll go down for the summer, we'll broadcast. People who were on their holidays and so for the summer, like, thought that was great, because they had their... The signal wouldn't have reached that far into Clare, so they had their favourite radio shows down on the beach over the summer, and I think some of the lads were kind of going, "Oh, this is a great crack," but coming back to the basement in Ellen Street then might not have been.
Maybe was it called Big L too?
It was kind of Big L. It'll be colloquial as to what it was officially. It was Big L 2, and Richardson had said he had plans for Big L 2. So whether that was the test to see would it work over there or not, whether it was officially BL2, but he had plans at that stage to maybe test the waters in relation to it.
But do you think it might have been sowing the seed of its decline in the end?
It seemed to, because we say this is one of the little bits that's kind of blurred in history in terms of what goes where, and it's one of the reasons why, I suppose, interviews like this, you'd love to have them from the time as well. But it went on from there to become, we'd say, Big L dropped off, but Mike Richardson and Francis Jones were running Midwest Radio from Limerick. That then went on to become Radio Clare above in Ennis, Francis and Mike again with a few others. And then, well, that was pretty good, it was short-lived, and then they went to Kerry, so WRKY, Rocky 103, would have been Big L in Kerry. That was pretty big for a while, and it seemed like you were listening to something familiar, just about Get It in Limerick on Good Days. And then, of course, that dropped off into Horizon. And Horizon then from Banna, seemed, that was pretty much the end of it. So WRKY was saying Killarney and Killorglin would have been the last time the Big Elf light shone, for, I suppose. But Horizon was there for a while after that. And then, of course, we were heading into the 86, 87, then, and of course, 88, most of it stopped.
But there were a few other stations of note, maybe City Centre Radio, because that was in a very high-profile location on Parnell Street in the City Centre. So very much the late period of the Pirates, when they weren't ashamed of showing themselves anymore and weren't afraid of being shut down.
It would have been the case, because, as I said, there was some of them there in basements. There was other ones that were in top floors. I know, would say some of the lads in Dublin would have stories of transmitters being thrown out windows if they were raided and so on. CCR probably broke that. I know some of the lads, would say, from Radical Knee went there. I know some of the guys who went there, like, who would have been on part-time, who would have been on at weekends, and they'd go up to CCR. And I know that, again, as with all the radio stations, there's a little bit of kind of competition. Everyone loves the same thing. Everyone knows everybody else. And then if somebody, I heard you were on there, but you're not coming back here, type of thing. So some of the lads from Radio Me would have stories about some of them that left to join CCR. But it was appealing. You came up Gerard Griffin Street. It was right on the corner. And because it's a kind of a skewed corner, it's not a. It was right in front of you. It was a prime location. And it was, the full glass windows as well. We say that it wasn't this small window keeping an eye out to see. It was there, and it was known. Ed Myers, who'd been well known to a lot of people around Limerick, as I mean, I would say he's the alter ego. We might skip it just for this one. William Leahy, who went on to FM, he would have started with CCR. Gerard Sweeney, who's with Clare FM. So it was the first time, I suppose, that it was so visible. Everything else, you'd kind of, if you're driving around, you'd be looking for a transmitter or a mast or seeing where it's stronger. But that was in your face there.
And was that only in the city, or could you get that in the county as well? Were they aiming for bigger than just Limerick City?
They had 97 and 103. So it seemed to be part of, we'll say, the setup, that there was two transmitters once you went on FM. Whether one of them would now be viewed just as a link transmitter to get it up somewhere and then get it out. So they had 97 and 103. The name being City Centre Radio didn't seem like they were too pushed on going beyond that, but whether that was a conscious decision or not is it does seem like a name that'll close you in.
And one more to note from that period, Hits 954. You were mentioning earlier about a rather dramatic moment when they changed their address from O'Connell Street in Limerick. Can you tell us about that?
Well, there was a few. There was Sound Channel was in as well, but you mentioned Hits 954. Hits 954 was at the top floor of 99 O'Connell Street, and it came as a shock to a certain celebrity that the building had been sublet. So as soon as that became aware of it, it was in the papers around Limerick that they had to basically vacate, and pretty quickly, because he wasn't happy to be associated with the pirate station. And they were on one night, and they basically, doing their thing in relation to this Hits 954 from the home of the hits, which was their tagline, and they had 99 O'Connell Street, Limerick, and they said they were going off the air for a few minutes. Right, so what the hell, right? Because back then they would have probably been the best FM transmitter that Limerick had heard, the best stereo split, the best quality sound, like the most presence, and so like we're going off air for a few minutes, and I think. A couple of kind of slight round hums and buzz and whatever. You're going, what's going on? Next thing, back on. This is Hits 954, broadcasting from the home of the hits, 5 Cecil Street in Limerick. So basically, in preparation for moving, they had taken everything across the road, whether it was Studio 2 or whether the Bare Essentials or whatever else, but basically, the only thing that was left at the time that this switched off was just the transmitter. Went that across the road into 5 Cecil Street, plugged it in, switched it on, and they were on like that. So it seemed like, as a youngster listening to the radio, it's kind of, they've moved a whole radio station in 5 minutes. They hadn't. As with everything else in radio, it's all about the perception and the what presence you can get across. The other one would have been Sound Channel, I suppose. That would have been the other one that was reasonably big in terms of pop music and so on. That was Darren O'Brien and Stuart Clark, who's with Hot Press, would have been there for a while as well. And then I suppose that would have been from the point of view of ones that I'd listened to, but loads of small ones that popped up for a few months. There was LBC and NBC on William Street. Both, I suppose, if the guys who were involved in that, I know Francis Jones actually ended up there for a while, but the guys who would have been involved in that, and Radio Vera, actually was another interesting take from the same stable. But the guys involved in that would have seen them as kind of the best thing ever. They're a part of Limerick, but I wouldn't have too much information on those. The big other big one in Limerick was Galty, which was the kind of country music station.
Okay.
So I think it'd be remiss of me to kind of say, oh, well, here's all the stations. And then, like, we say, John Frawley, which may not have been aimed at me at the time, Galty was huge for an awful lot of people who would be, the, we say, people who'd go to the Green Hills for jiving and kind of country and Irish music. Galty was really, really big.
That a city station as well?
It was. It was a city station, primarily country music. There was a couple of well-known characters who would have been on it. Mike Gardner, Claire FM, would have been. And a lot of the names, we'll say, that have gone on. Now there's newer names, I suppose, but in 88, 89, 90, when the new station started, most of the names were familiar to people from. And I said Mike would have been on Galty. Country Bob, who's now living in sunnier climes, would have been a big part of that as well. So
I'll just ask you a more general question maybe, Liam, is why do you think there were so many at that time? I mean, it's a relatively small city now. It was a smaller city then. Was there money to be made by all of these stations, or were many of them kind of hobby broadcasters, or were there serious bucks being made?
I don't think there's any majorly serious bucks being made. I think for all of the stations, and I know you'd have had stories, you wouldn't have had anything remotely like Dublin where all the guys were being paid and it was all as above board as it could have been. And there was a lot of stuff that was voluntary. But people seem to love the buzz. And I think it's one of the strange things in relation to, say, the size of the city, Dublin being the biggest, Cork being next, Limerick then fighting it out for Galway for third place, and depending on whether you include the suburbs or not, just about beats it. But yet, when it comes to pirate radio, it seems to be Dublin and Limerick. I suppose it's the interesting one, in even in terms of when the licences came on in Limerick, the original legal station in Limerick was Radio Limerick 1. There was supposed to be another, by virtue of even the name of it. And it never came on stream. That would say you would have had the AM licence awarded. I don't know if any station was ever, if that was ever really feasible. I know they were touted at the time.
There was an AM licence awarded for Limerick, was there?
There was, yeah. There was an AM licence that never took off at all. And I suppose if you look at the stations like Hits 954, we're on 101 with an absolutely fantastic transmitter. 954 was weak. Really, really weak. Like, you'd be lucky to get it just outside the city. Likewise, we say Big L would have been advertising itself as 194. And likewise, we say Radio Me would have been on medium wave. It's almost like trying to figure out now, if you were setting up a station, would it be FM, would it be DAB, or would it be the internet? Because medium wave was starting to drift out. Like, even Atlantic came back, Atlantic 252, like, was suddenly the resurgence of long wave, which had been pretty much deserted apart from BBC World Service or something. So medium wave, I don't know if it was ever really a runner. It was probably there for talk radio, like, as in you won't need the fidelity, you won't need the quality. But like, even when Century came on legally, the 1143 was really, really weak. And like News Talk, okay, they can broadcast in mono, but they still got FM, even though you'd imagine it would suit medium wave.
So just to finish up then by talking about RLO, Radio Limerick 1, which of course was the licence station, the first, apparently, licence station in 1989. There never was another one, but that had a very checkered history itself in terms of its pirate status. It reverted to being a pirate. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
It did, yeah. There was, I suppose, originally, I think it was probably trying to do too much. We'll say, if you looked at the lineup on that between the different types of shows, the talk shows, there was a significant variety across the day. We're saying between classical and country, and we'll say pop music, and they tried to do an awful lot. As we say, the station, we'll say, between financials and trying to possibly be too much, where one of the things you'd find nowadays, people say, well, make sure they switch on in the morning and stay on all day. So there's that in shops, so there's more, it's more familiar. They tried to do too much, and it wasn't possible for a station to do everything, one station to do everything. It just wasn't possible. They tried a few experiments as well, which were like Ireland's Overnight Network, which was when they went on satellite, that it was actually available in Highland Radio in Donegal and Tip Midwest, among others. Now, I know there was a few others. So they were actually, where a lot of the stations were shutting down overnight and putting on Super Gold or whatever from the UK, they suddenly had an option. So all of that was done from in Raheen. And some of it raised a few hackles between being on satellite and relaying to other stations. There was also a couple of issues in relation to local news, like where there was a bus strike and there was a question mark over whether, like, okay, can we override that because anyone going to the bus station is whatever. So there was a couple of bits of friction in relation to the licence. They ended up losing the licence. I'm not going to delve into exactly why, but it was kind of, there was almost a couple of yellow cards, whether they added up or there was something more, I don't know. But the the licence then was awarded to the new 95 FM. And RLO initially moved to 98 FM with a kind of clever advertising thing, kind of Windows 95 is the thing of the past, 98 is the way to go, which was marketing genius at the time. But then it got bogged down as well in, like, being a pirate. Some of the presenters who had been on it had left, obviously, because they were working for a legal station. They wanted to stay working for a legal station. Some of them stayed put. But then you ended up with the scenario where gradually, okay, it couldn't be on 98 FM. And you got into this whole story whereby, we're not actually broadcasting, it's community groups that are rebroadcasting it. And you're going to go, well, what are they rebroadcasting? Oh, we have a satellite signal. Why do you still have that? So it ended up being reported to the UK, as in, here's what they're doing with the satellite, and kind of, who's they? But the license to broadcast on satellite was pulled, so that shut it down.
So they were continuing to broadcast on satellite after they had lost their license to broadcast on FM?
Well, that was the story that was there, that was how the community groups were picking it up and relaying it. So that was
And how long did it continue for then, RLO, in pirate form? When did it finally? I think there was a couple of raids.
There was a couple of raids, there was a couple of argumentative RDS displays and so on, because they wanted to keep the licence. And some of that's understandable. If you had the licence, you wanted to keep it. They had RLO TV as well, and some of that ended up being almost a simulcast of what was going on air. Now, they had some brilliant things. I've heard stories, from Eddie, who's doing the pirate radio archive and so on, that Paul O'Connell was first on RLO TV, so that one was news to me. But there were local matches, there was local discussion, there was a certain amount of it that was pretty good, right? But then that kind of fell by the wayside into being almost a webcam at the time of what was on in studio. And when that webcam then isn't even studio guests, when it's a phone in, like, I know Off the Ball does some of that but there's three or four people. It's still probably not the best TV. Apologies to Off the Ball, but it's, in their case, it's a strong radio show that carries. It's not meant to be the whole TV channel, if you know what I mean. So it ended up being kind of a little bit kind of haphazard and kind of roll your eyes at times. But look, it's all part of the history, and there were so many things tried. Like, was it that TV station was the first kind of local TV apart from cable, Westward Cables was able, who were the original multi-channel, where they tried a local TV station that was through the cable network. They had the Irons Overnight Network via the satellite that was broadcast to other parts of the country. So there was lots of innovation on it, whether they kind of stepped outside the remit of their licence and kind of then got their backs up and then got argumentative with the RDS and stuff. So it was a pity to see it, because it was certainly, as I said, one station that was never going to fill the area. Like you say, if you were saying earlier on about Limerick wasn't that big, but in terms of other areas, we'll say, where there's one station serving, it might be enough. Do you know what I mean? Whereas when you're big, you have more diversity, more interest and so on. One station couldn't possibly cover everything, because somebody was going to switch off at some stage. So they had to aim big. Limerick didn't get the second licence. Of course, since now, there's extra stations that are national stations, and you've also got Spin Southwest based, and LCCR are doing it a little bit to plug a couple of the community gaps as well. So there's now a couple of stations based in Limerick, even though Spin, we'll say, would be for the Southwest. But it's like Dublin in some cases as well, where it's kind of, you switch on and you could have two mainstream stations and two alternative stations and hear the same song on all four. So it's interesting time to head. Whether the future would be stuff on FM or whether the future would be stuff like online, it's going to be interesting. But there's a great history. And as you said, like, it's from the very first pirate broadcast coming from Limerick way back when, through Capital RLWE, then through the stations that would have made an impact, I suppose, growing up. None as big as Nova or anything like that, but they certainly had an impact. And a lot of the voices that are on are from a myriad of different stations. Like, we'd say, Mike Gardner does a country music show on Clare FM, Francis Jones, Blow and Kerry, Declan's still flying it on 95, and other people, when they bump into each other, going, oh yeah, I remember that. Good times.